Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Today we hear about the importance of after-school programs and out-of-school learning and the role it plays in child and youth development. After-school programs run the gamut from athletics to arts-focused activities in music, drama, or visual arts to interest groups in computing, coding, or design to mentorship programs in business, agriculture, or advanced academics to organize volunteer efforts in mentoring or helping the elderly. A properly developed after-school program is key in developing social and emotional learning. And organizations like Tulsa's New Opportunity Project are now serving as an intermediary, linking schools and community agencies, volunteers, and private sector efforts with local youth and families. The project will participate in the nationwide Lights On after-school celebration this Thursday with a youth musical performance from an after-school program and talks from Mayor G.T. Bynum and an address from child advocate and youth development expert Karen Pittman. Pittman is my guest today. She has served at the Urban Institute and the Children's Defense Fund before joining the Clinton administration as the director of the President's Crime Prevention Council. She's the co-founder and CEO of the Forum for Youth Investment, which advocates for after-school programming and access for every child in America. She'll be speaking at the Lights On after-school celebration Thursday morning. The event gets underway at 8:45 at the Central Center in Centennial Park. Karen Pittman, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Rich. It's a pleasure to be with you.
You've been a longtime advocate of after-school programs. What kind of difference can these programs have on a child's development?
Well, after-school programs can make a huge difference in a child's life for several reasons. First, they start by providing safe, supported places for young people to go when they leave school. So they're referred to generally as after-school because they are where young people go when they leave school. That's really important, clearly, if they have working parents, but it's also important because it provides them with developmental opportunities that complement the school day, that let them explore their interests, that let them be with a wider age group of young people, that let them do things with community members in their neighborhood, that gives them a stronger sense of community, and that lets them really practice the skills that they build during school as well as the skills that they build in their families.
A lot of people look at the sort of social, emotional, and experiential learning that after-school programs can provide. Realistically, how many after-school programs are all about that first part that you mentioned, the safe place after school, as opposed to a program where you're really making those social, emotional connections and experiential learning opportunities?
Well, I would say it's not an either-or, it's a both-and question. The first thing that any place where young people are spending their time has to start with is making sure that that place is safe and supportive and really helping young people build relationships. So there's no circumstance in which we can underestimate the importance of making sure young people are physically and emotionally safe. Having said that, once that's happened, and one of the best ways to make sure that's happening is that we're helping young people build relationships, which really is helping them practice those social skills, and that we're engaging them in interesting, challenging experiences, and that really helps them then build those cognitive skills that are so important for young adult success. It's a continuum.
Yeah, after-school programs can mean a lot of different things. For some people, it means sports. Some people, it means play. Other times, it's arts or crafts or developing interest in a particular hobby or something like that. What sort of programs make the most difference?
Good ones, the answer. The thing that we have to value about these after-school programs, whether they're offered by the school, they're offered by the community, is their diversity. This is what makes them different from school, that young people have a lot more choice in picking the content that they want to focus on, that they actually have more choice often in picking the young people that they want to be with and in picking the adults they want to be with. And so the fact that we're talking about programs that young people participate in voluntarily, or that their parents assign them to voluntarily, or sign them up for voluntarily, really is one of the key features that allows these programs to be more flexible and be more inviting. And so you can go to a program like a Boys and Girls Club or a Y, where a young person can be exposed at a basic level to explore all those things, art, STEM, sports, take a swimming class while being in a safe environment that's there for them 5 days a week. But as young people get older, and one of the challenges that we have with after-school programs is if we think of them as primarily a safe place where young people go 5 days a week, by the time we get to adolescence, that's actually not what a teenager wants. They want to get more specialized. So I want to go do robotics. Where do I go do that? I want to be in a choir. You know, I want to learn hip-hop dance. Whatever I want to do, I may want to go to the people that actually have the expertise in that. And now that I'm more mobile, I need to show up in different places. So the variety of activities is important for young people, and we have to really sort of make sure that's factored in as a part of quality.
When we're talking about after-school programs, I was thinking at the school site, but you're not necessarily talking about that. It can be, as you mentioned, a boys or girls club. It could be 4-H in a rural area. It could be all sorts of places.
Absolutely. What we're looking at is an array of things that young people literally can do when the formal school day is over. They're required to be in that school building from 8 to 3 or 9 to 3 or whatever. At the end of that, if you're really looking at a community that's really embraced after school, young people may be having a variety of things to do in that building. That's especially convenient for some families to have a young person stay in that same building. And often those programs in that building are offered by a variety of community providers like Boys and Girls Clubs, by arts organizations, and offered by the school themselves. So teachers are actually teaching those programs, whether that's hands-on science or whatever. So you've got an array of things. When you put sports in there, certainly by the time you get to middle school and high school, most schools have sports programs that they want young people to be participating in. So a young person is perhaps doing basketball and then going to something else. So it's an array of organizations, and we can't forget about faith organizations. We can't forget about our rec departments, and libraries are a part of this network of organizations that are providing after school and summer and before school and weekend. So often the term is out of school rather than just after school, because we're looking at filling all that time or using all that time.
Now, the way you phrase that, it sounds like it's very important to have some sort of umbrella network that's helping coordinate all these different providers within a school setting, or even if it's an off-school setting. You're coming here to speak for the Opportunity Projects. What role does that project, that is sort of a convener of a lot of these different organizations, how important is their role?
The role of the Opportunity Project and other sort of system builders or intermediary organizations as they're cropping up around the country, and these have been being built over the past 20 years, it's critically important for the reason that you just said. The diversity of these kind of programs, they're diverse not just in the age groups of the young people that they serve, in the kinds of programming that they offer, but in what kind of organizations they're in. So they're across the community in all different kinds of ways. That diversity is a plus only if we can help young people and families find access, figure out what's there. That diversity and that sort of decentralization means that we really have to go the extra mile to make sure that families know what's available, that families can access what's available, that it's affordable. And we also then have to be really transparent about the evenness. We can talk about school quality, but we know, because it's mandated, that young people have to find their way to a public school. We don't have a mandate that says young people have to find their way to an after-school program or an out-of-school opportunity that meets their needs and interests. And so we have a very hidden equity problem if we don't have some kind of, as you said, sort of umbrella structure in place to really identify what's there and to identify gaps.
In your experience, how big is that equity gap that you're talking about? I can imagine that in affluent school districts, there's an awful lot of opportunities. In less affluent school districts, there might not be all that much. There may be a lot of partners trying to step up, but there may not be the same level of evenness in creating that diversity you're talking about.
A wonderfully important point. The equity gap is huge, and it's hidden. And as I said, it's hidden because with these programs, because they're voluntary, and because as communities, we haven't necessarily decided that this is something every young person needs to have, we really do have an opportunity gap before we even get to talking about quality. So, for example, the After School Alliance, which is the sponsor of Lights on After School, the After School Alliance estimates, for example, that there are about 4.5 or 5 million young people from lower-income families who would like to attend after-school programs but can't find them. they also estimate that by sixth grade, middle-class kids have spent 4,000 more hours in after-school and summer learning opportunities than their lower-income counterparts. So we have to recognize that when we count up those hours that young people could be in some kind of supportive learning setting, it's almost as many hours when you count the after-school hours and the summer hours. It's almost as many hours as they spend during the school day. And so that opportunity to almost double your learning time. And if you double that learning time and you're doing it in ways that are helping young people really build on their strengths, you're also really helping them come back into school as better, more motivated learners. And we have lots of research that says when young people participate in quality out-of-school opportunities, it actually increases their attendance in school, it increases their interest in school, because they're really practicing those skills that let them be better learners.
A lot of times when people think of after-school programs, they're thinking during the school year. You've mentioned summer learning as a big part of after-school programs. How important is that in that overall social and emotional development, as well as the experiential part that helps make a more rounded young person?
Again, hugely important. You know, a couple of years ago, there was a lot of studies that were coming out about summer learning loss and the idea that young people lose a lot of, in particular, the math skills that they get during the school year get lost over the course of the summer because they don't get to practice them. But we also really need, and that's important, because there's no point in having us have young people come back into school and spend the first 2 or 3 months of school getting back to where they were when they left in the spring. So that's an important point. But equally important, we could really talk about summer learning gain, which is when you have young people, especially young people who may be struggling during the academic year, when you give them a very supportive learning experience during the summer in which they're building those social, emotional, and cognitive skills and applying them to content that is of more interest to them, can be equally rigorous content. They may be putting on a play. They may be doing all kinds of things. They may be learning to rebuild a car engine. They're applying those skills, but they're applying them to something that's of more interest to them, and they're applying it in a less high-stakes setting in which they're not being graded. They're going to come back in the beginning of the school year having really gained confidence in themselves as learners, as well as having actually gained skill growth, social, emotional, cognitive, and if it's a good program, also gained some skill growth in those sort of academic areas as well, like reading and writing.
I'm glad you provided those examples, because I think certainly if you're a kid, you hear summer learning, you think summer school. And you're not necessarily talking about that, although there could be some component in that, right?
Absolutely. We can mix it together. I'll give you an example from Washington State, a place where we've worked. So they had a desire to help their elementary school students really not have that summer learning loss and to help young people who were struggling in reading and math in the elementary school grades really get caught up over the summer. Rather than just doing summer school, which typically is a half-day academic program that young people will come to at their school building, they partnered with youth development organizations like the Boys and Girls Club or the Y, and they ran full-day programs at the schools for these young people. They had teachers who were trained in the specific math curriculum that were selected to help them sort of build up their math skills and their reading skills. So the teachers were trained in those curricula, but then they decided, and they were partnered with the youth organizations to offer a whole day program. So whether they did the morning as academics and the afternoon as fun, however they decided to do it, they had the academic content, and then they had that embedded in a full day at summer program. What we learned when we looked at the quality of the program, quality defined not by the math and reading content, because that was constant across all of them, but quality defined by what you were talking about. Were these programs really safe? Were they supportive? Were they engaging young people in active learning? Were they focusing on these social and emotional skills? When they were doing all those things and young people were in a high-quality program that was getting the same math and reading content, their math and reading gains were 5 times more than when they were in a low-quality program. You see the connection. We basically need to understand that learning is social and emotional. When we say social and emotional learning, it sounds like one more thing that kids have to be taught. Again, math at 10 o'clock, and then I get social and emotional learning at 11 o'clock. If I tell you learning is social and emotional, you recognize that until you engage me, the learning isn't going to stick, no matter how rigorous the content is. And so what we're learning is when we take the time to build safe, supportive, engaging environments for young people, whatever the content is, they will learn it better.
My guest today is Karen Pittman. She's the co-founder and CEO of the Forum for Youth Investment. She served in the Clinton administration as director of the President's Crime Prevention Council and held posts at the Urban Institute and the Children's Defense Fund. She'll be in Tulsa to celebrate the Opportunity Project's Lights On After School anniversary this Thursday. It's the 20th anniversary nationwide, and it'll also show what's going on in our own community in after-school programs. You know, when I think of after-school programs, I think of K through 8. You know, once you get to high school, you're often involved in extracurricular activities like sports or music or that would take you outside of the normal school day. But I was looking at some of the after-school programs, and really there's a real need for after-school programs in the 9th through 12th grade years as well.
Absolutely. I mean, the need increases rather than decreases. If our goal is to make sure young people are coming out of school by the end of 12th grade fully ready for college, work, and life, which means that they are really ready with this full set of skills and competencies and knowledge, and that they've had a lot of opportunities to actually practice those in applied settings, then this is where they actually need more time, not to just be sitting in a classroom, but actually then applying those skills, applying that knowledge so they're ready for the real world. What the after-school program is going to look like is different. And that's one of the reasons why we see the numbers drop, because it's, as I said, it's not I'm going to go to the same building 5 days a week and see the same people. Once I'm mobile as a teenager, I need those opportunities to do very specific things. But they have to be available, and they have to still have the same focus on skill building. But usually at this point, young people have moved from a need to be able to explore different things to actually have time to master the things they want to get good at. And that's where those opportunities are often lacking.
You know, it's interesting. Educational systems sort of move glacially, and, you know, our society changes very quickly. You know, there's still parts of our educational day and that are dictated by customs that go back decades that are not necessarily the case. And one of those, I think, is the idea that when you get to high school, you're going to work a job after school. And now when you look at the statistics, very few high school students, or far fewer high school students, are taking a job after school. And I think that's why there's been a dearth of interest and perhaps even a perception that there's no need for after school programs at the high school level, because you go back to the old custom of after school, you go to your job. That's not necessarily the case anymore.
Right. It's not the case for a couple of reasons. You know, one, it's harder to find the jobs. So especially if we're talking about young people in lower-income communities, they're absolutely looking for jobs. They're having a hard time finding those jobs. The second thing is we do need to recognize that while jobs provide, and any job, provide some basic sort of work experience and certainly can provide young people with income, whether that's discretionary income or essential income for their families, it also takes real partnerships with the business community to make sure that that job also is a good developmental experience. And sometimes those end up being unpaid jobs. Those are internships that I may take. And so we really need to look at this whole idea of high school very differently, which also could mean that we're thinking about, and there are great high schools that do this, I'm thinking about the community as the classroom, not just the classrooms in my building.
And you've said your hope is that after-school programs will, in the next few years, be a complementary and integral part of the K-12 education. In many parts of our country, certainly in Oklahoma, funding the K-12 school day portion of education has been and remains a challenge. Is it up to the community to make these programs possible, or is it up to a mixture of school and community members to make these programs possible?
Again, it's a both end. And we can do this in a couple of ways. First of all, most after-school programs, out-of-school youth development programs, are funded by a mixture of public and private dollars. They may not be getting dollars from the school system, but they may be tapping into dollars for nutrition services or for health services or for social services. And so there are a wide range of federal, state, and local program dollars that can be available to support what young people are doing in the after hours. The other thing which often gets forgotten is that most communities, even if the investment is uneven, have invested in their libraries and their parks and rec programs. And those are buildings where young people often go after school, where there are staff. There may not be enough staff. They may need to add volunteers. They may need to have staff that are trained. But we have an infrastructure that we're underutilizing. And certainly when we add into that infrastructure nonprofit organizations, civic organizations, faith organizations, what we find is that if you actually start to count what's out there and start to map the landscape of things that are currently going on, it's not that nothing is going on. It's that in some neighborhoods, less is going on, and it's less diverse, and it's less stable. And so again, just if we really bought into the idea that for young people to really be ready for post-secondary education, for work, for life, for the military, for citizenship, whatever we want them to be ready for, they need to have access to a rich array of experiences in as many of their waking hours as possible. And we start to say, where are those experiences and where are the adults? We would get a picture that's much bigger than the picture we have now. It would be an uneven picture. That would be the bad news. But the good news is there's more out there than we think, and it's being funded in a diverse set of ways.
You've said one of the challenges of after-school programs is getting a community to understand why it's important and the benefits it provides to an individual student, but also the benefit to the community that invests in it. Can you talk about that benefit?
Absolutely. The benefit to the community when we first started talking about after-school in some ways was either a benefit, was a safety benefit, that either it's helping, these programs are helping our children be safe, or frankly, if we were thinking about teenagers, these programs are helping teenagers be occupied so that we're safer. They're a way to reduce gangs. They're a way to reduce delinquency. They're a way to make sure young people are not engaging in risky behaviors that either harm us or cost us money down the road. We now know, however, that if we're really investing and thinking broadly about engaging young people as fully and as early as we can, young people can be tremendous contributors to their community if we invest in them. And so the number of programs out there that have young people not just in a building doing activities, but out in their communities volunteering and contributing and mapping what's going on and doing research and working with the elderly and doing projects is huge. And so the whole idea of making sure that we're thinking about service and we're thinking about young people as researchers, as advocates, as a part of what they need to be doing to be good citizens, that's also what can be happening in these after-school hours. This is also a way, when we talk about community, to really talk about young people helping to knit together their communities. When young people have time to not just interact with the young people in their school, but perhaps interact through a community of interest with young people from across the city, they are helping to build community. They're helping to make connections that will both keep them in Tulsa, but also have them be better understanding what the needs and opportunities are to make a rich community life. So all of these are things that have been documented that obviously we could talk about more, but the benefits of thinking more broadly about this are there.
Do you think most communities do get that today?
You know, I think most parents get it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the challenge is we just don't talk about it enough and don't talk about it in the right ways. But when you ask parents directly, what are the skills and competencies you're looking for your children? They'll tell you all the things that you just said. I want my young person to be able to work in a team, to solve problems, be on time, to have empathy, to have, they'll tell you all these things that they want young people to have, and they'll tell you that they need to practice them and that they need these experiences. They believe that they can get them in school, but they don't think that's sufficient. And most families are really sort of looking very intentionally for opportunities for their young people to practice these skills, to build their interests, to address sort of weak spots. They recognize that they need this. I think we don't have the right kind of conversation in communities. And part of that, I think, comes from us having a very narrow definition of what learning is. For the most part, we've been doing this for a long time. If you ask people to close their eyes and think about one of their most valuable learning experiences, rarely, and I say rarely, like less than 15% of the time, do people name something that actually happened in a school classroom. Their most valuable learning experiences are experiential. You used that word earlier.
Yeah, life experiences.
They'll tell you that there was a life experience. And so where are they getting those life experiences? And who are they with? And teachers are absolutely amazing and essential contributors to our young people, but we do a disservice to the idea of learning when we overemphasize the importance of teachers. And even the rest of the adults in the building don't get credit for the contributions that they make to learning and the contribution that the places that they staff, which are not just the academic classroom, those are settings where learning can happen. And so I know there are also settings where adults who are not teachers, whether they are counselors, they are psychologists, they are administrators, they are cafeteria workers, bus drivers, all these are folks who can contribute to young people's learning and development. And so another thing, I think when we talk about after-school programs, as opposed to after-school or out-of-school or just broader learning experiences, is that we tend to think, where's the building where kids are going, as opposed to where's the experience that young people are having and who are the adults that they're working with.
And I would imagine that's one of the biggest challenges in ramping up those high-quality programs is getting people to expand their definitions. I mean, when you were talking about some of the high-quality programs that do make a difference, like helping the elderly, sort of an intergenerational sort of situation, I didn't really think of that as sort of a great after-school program that could contribute to social and emotional learning.
Absolutely. Or young people, you have peer tutors. You have young people in middle and high school, working in their elementary schools. They can be doing that after school. That's an after-school program. These things need structure. They need, they need support. They need organization. But when we broaden our definitions, we really get to see the opportunities. There's an organization called PlayWorks that is really taking off across the country. And these folks decided that they really wanted to find a way to emphasize in this country the research on the importance of play. You mentioned play earlier, and we tend to say, oh, they're just playing. Well, from a learning perspective, play is critically important and one of the most effective ways for young people to build all of those skills that we're talking about, as well as just refuel their motivation to be learners, to be curious. But when you think about school and you think about play, you think about recess. And recess is a time in which we open the doors, if it's not too cold, we let the kids out, and some adults in the building have been assigned to stand on the playground. I'm thinking about an elementary school.
Right.
And their job, quite frankly, is just to make sure they don't kill each other. However, that half hour or 45 minutes is a time when social, emotional, and cognitive learning could be happening, when young people are self-organizing into teams. We could be working on all of these skills, but we don't think of it that way. We think of it as just they have to go outside to load off steam so they can come back in and learn in the classroom. And so what this organization, PlayWorks, has done is bring youth work staff into schools to help people understand the importance of play and understand simple things they can do to help young people maximize that learning time. And then they come back into the classroom, not having just let off steam, but really having enhanced those skills and much better ready to learn and contribute.
Child advocate and youth development expert Karen Pittman speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. She's the co-founder and CEO of the Forum for Youth Investment. She'll be a guest of the Opportunity Project, a new intermediary helping coordinate after-school programs in the Tulsa area. They'll be participating in the Lights On After School celebration this Thursday, beginning at 8:45 at Central Center in Centennial Park. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.